What do you think?
I think we're dead meat. Real dead meat.
You're dead meat! Go ahead and laugh, you guys. If I ever find a little passage of business, you're dead meat.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Dead Meat Podcast. This is James A. Janice.
And this is Chelsea Rebecca, and we're a boyfriend and girlfriend, and we like to get scared together.
Yeah, we do. This podcast is an extension of the Dead Meat YouTube channel that you know and love, hopefully. If you don't, check it out. And we're using this podcast as an excuse to do all sorts of things with horror.
We're trying out a few different things because we just started, so we're gonna do a review today.
And I let you pick this one out from my Blu-ray collection. And yeah. What movie did you pick, Chelsea?
I picked Wishmaster.
That's right.
Because I had never seen it. I feel like I've heard of it at least, but the premise, once you explained what it was, it was hard to sway me to pick anything else.
Yeah, I did try to lean you in other directions just as a test. I'm fine with Wishmaster, and it ended up being I was more than fine with Wishmaster.
Yep.
Because it's been a long time since I've seen this movie. I feel like Wishmaster is on, I don't know what I would call it, the tier two of horror movies. If your tier one horror movies are the ones that even non-horror fans are familiar with, your Fridays and your Nightmares and your Halloweens and your Saws and all that, I feel like tier two is the horror movies that maybe those people wouldn't know, and maybe even some casual horror fans wouldn't know.
So what, this Phantasm?
Phantasm, I would also definitely put a tier two.
Maybe Puppet Master?
Sure, yeah,
tier two.
I'm trying to think.
And we're not saying those are worse.
No.
It's
I'm just saying as far as notoriety goes.
Yes.
I feel like Leprechaun would be halfway in between the two.
Yeah, because I think I knew what Leprechaun was even before I got into horror movies.
Yeah. But Wishmaster is, you've done some digging. You know what Wishmaster is? You've probably watched a lot of horror movies. And this movie is actually, I think it's a great little treat for horror fans. It is chocked full of horror people.
I fucking loved Wishmaster. It's a great, great movie. Not a good movie.
No, it's not a good
movie. It's not good at all, but it's so fun. It's in that nice sweet spot of schlocky. It's bad, but it's good.
Yeah, and I think that it's not meta, but it also doesn't take itself too seriously.
Yeah.
It definitely respects the genre and fans of the genre. It was released in 1997. It is Wes Craven presents Wishmaster, but that just means
he executive produced.
Yeah, which in most cases for a movie, not television's entirely different, mind you. For a movie, most of the time executive producers are just the people putting up the money. But I feel like probably more likely with horror, they also may have had some creative input.
Yeah, and presents also, the person I always think of is Quentin Tarantino.
Yeah.
Like, go look at how many movies have Quentin Tarantino presents. It's so many.
Yeah. And it's also just kind of like that person is giving their seal of approval.
Exactly.
So you can trust that it is something that they like, that maybe is it jives with the tone of their productions. Because this comes out a year after Scream. So Wes Craven is hot right now. 97. He is hot, hot, hot. Like, mm-hmm. No wonder he had so many people working with him here. He had, I mean, you get not only Robert Englund in a substantial role here, but you also get cameos from Kane Hodder and Tony Todd.
Yeah, those opening credits were a ride because I didn't know who was in this. So it was like Kane Hodder is like, oh, and then Tony Todd, oh my God. And then Robert Englund, oh my God.
Yeah.
I was so excited.
I don't know if there's any other movie that has Jason, Freddy, and Candyman all together.
Yeah.
Maybe, I don't know if Tony Todd is in Hatchet, but that might be the case with those. I haven't seen those movies.
That's kind of a fun trick question, is like, what movie are Robert Englund and Kane Hodder in together?
Yeah.
It's not Freddy versus Jason, it's Wishmaster. So the composer was Harry Manfredini.
Yep, and he did all the music for a bunch of the Friday the 13th, not all of them, but most notably now, perhaps, The Game. He scored The Game. And there are a lot of moments in this movie where there are little stingers and bursts of music that sound like they were lifted straight from the game. Just like a trumpet, like blah, 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 mm-hmm. with the strings. It was great. That was a lot of fun. The director is Robert Kurtzman, and he's not really primarily a director. He's actually a makeup guy.
Okay, primarily. So kind of a Tom Savini. Like, Tom Savini did makeup, but then he started directing and stuff.
Yeah, that's right, because Tom Savini directed the 1990 remake of Night of the Living Dead.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Tom Savini shows up in this for like a second.
He also
we missed
a cameo.
It. We had to go back and find him.
Yep. And he's in a scene with a cameo from Reggie Bannister, who is in all the Phantasm movies.
There's so many people in this. It's
Robert Kurtzman, he did makeup on Dream Warrior, Dream Child, those two Freddy movies. 13 Ghosts, which has a lot of good gore. Most recently, Bye Bye Man.
Oh my God. Yep. We need to do a review of the Bye Bye Man.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Someday.
I think he wrote From Dusk Till Dawn. Mm-hmm. So he's definitely involved. And like, there were a bunch of makeup guys on this movie because it looks good. One of the makeup guys is Greg Nicotero, who actually formed a company with Robert Kurtzman, and Howard Berger, who is also a makeup guy here. And Greg Nicotero is most known, I think, for doing the makeup for The Walking Dead. So,
okay.
Big, big pedigrees here. So let's the overview of this movie is that there's a genie running around.
It's a djinn.
It's a djinn,
it's
not a
djinn,
genie.
Specifically not a genie.
Forget Barbara Eden. Forget Robin Williams. Mm-hmm. It's a djinn. And
I think it's nuts that this movie came out in the late 90s.
Why do you say that?
This feels like an 80s movie to me, like the premise at least, or early 90s. Premise, because I feel like late 90s is when horror started to get super grounded, or at least like because of Scream and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
So I think of stuff like I Know What You Did Last Summer. You know, it's stuff that's a bit more grounded in reality and isn't as silly.
I guess this would be more in line. It feels more in line with like Child's Play or Leprechaun.
Yeah,
and that's late 80s, early 90s.
Yeah.
So yeah, 97 does feel a little late for this premise. But boy, is it fun.
Oh, God, it's so, so wonderful.
So it opens in the 12th century in Persia, where there's just a bunch of crazy shit going
yeah.
on.
Oh, well, don't forget there's a giant text wall at the beginning of this movie.
Oh, narrated by Angus Scrimm, the tall man from Phantasm, just in case you needed one more horror legend to be involved in your movie.
Yeah, so
yeah there's like two...
You have to read like two pages of stuff before the movie starts. And it's like about how God created the angels or something. He created light, then light created angels, something, something. The djinn got created and they exist like on another plane. I don't know.
Once in a time before time, God breathed life into the universe, and the light gave birth to angels, and the earth gave birth to man, and the fire gave birth to the djinn, creatures condemned to dwell in the void between the worlds.
Yeah, don't start your horror movie off with two pages of reading.
Yeah.
Even if you have Angus Scrimm reading it. But so then we're running around a set that looks like it's straight out of the Brendan Fraser Mummy movie.
I wrote down on here that this had better effects already than The Mummy. It looked better than The Mummy.
Oh, I don't know about that.
No, it absolutely does. Oh, I thought. Which is...
I'm a Mummy defender. I'm a Mummy apologist.
See, we watched it recently.
Despite the racism of it. It's a fun adventure movie that happens to be a little racist.
It's a little racist.
It's, yeah. But there's a whole bunch of crazy shit going on. People have like wooden heads and there's a chest burster coming out. And like the guy with the skeleton who like his own skeleton rips
that
out of his
cool.
skin. So like right off the bat, it's like, oh, cool. We get some cool effects.
I like there's a guy who's turning into a snake. And he's
oh,
like,
snake guy.
Help us.
Yeah, you said he didn't even, that he didn't get that bad of a deal.
No, I'm saying that if you're there and you had to pick, like all the things that are going on, if I had to pick, all right, do I want to have a chest burster rip out of my stomach or do I want my skeleton to like start becoming independent of my body or would I just want to be a snake? I'd rather just turn into a snake.
I guess.
This genie, by the way, just made me think of what would have happened in Aladdin if Jafar won and just... became a genie and that's how
Ooh.
The movie ended. He's like Jafar out of control.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, the guy running around looking at all this stuff, and I do say looking at it because he like stops and watches some of it happen for a while just to like give us the treat of checking out this awesome makeup. It's actually Zoroaster, the founder of what is, I believe, commonly accepted as the world's first monotheistic religion, Zoroastrianism.
Famous Zoroastrian, Freddie Mercury.
Oh, that's right.
He's who I always think of.
I can't remember exactly the tenets of the faith or the details of it. I always just, my brain kind of always sticks to fun facts and trivia, and I just know that it's like the first monotheistic religion. Mm. But this is Zoroaster running around, big historical figure, and he stops the, is it a pharaoh? Is it a king?
I think it, the Wikipedia said he was the emperor.
Okay.
Sure. Which makes sense, the Persian Empire,
yeah,
sure.
That makes sense. And yeah, this emperor is about to give this Jin a third wish, but Zoroaster stops him. And he puts him in an amulet.
Yep.
Yeah.
He puts the genie in.
He puts the genie.
Not the emperor.
That's right.
So the djinn goes into this big jewel.
So we do get a look at the djinn and what he looks like in that opening scene. And how do you feel about it?
I love it.
Yeah.
I love the djinn so much. I want to meet this actor and tell him I love him.
And the actor is Andrew Divoff.
Yeah.
Who would reprise the role in the first sequel, not the latter two, but also...
This fucked you up last night.
This fucked me up when you found out and told me. He played Mikhail in Lost. Lost is a passion of mine. I will occasionally scream at the skies randomly for what it did in the sixth season because I hate it.
Yeah.
But it is, I maintain that it is five seasons of amazing television. And so to find out that this dude was in Lost... he's the guy with the eye patch, the Russian guy with the eye patch who caused a little trouble for our survivors. He's an other. He ends up outside of a sub, blowing himself up with a grenade, and that ends up killing Charlie. Spoiler alert.
You know what's freaky to think about is I bet that those episodes of Lost are closer to Wishmaster than they are to present day.
100% they are.
That's weird.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's weird. But Andrew Divoff does a great job.
Oh my God, he's having so much fun.
Yeah, he looks just like Patrick Warburton.
He does,
because we see him later out of makeup. He walks around as like a guy.
Yeah.
And he's having a great time doing that. He's having a great time in the makeup. He's given like kind of like a half Jack Nicholson performance, I think.
Yeah, I could see it.
Yeah, it was hard for me to pin down exactly what he was doing. A lot of like crazy grinning. And but yeah, he looks... exactly like Patrick Warburton to me. It was freaking me out there.
There's a little Freddy, I think.
In the performance?
Mm-hmm.
Sure, yeah. I wondered how the on-set conversations were with him and like...
And Robert Englund.
And Robert Englund.
I bet Robert Englund was very... I just imagine him being very fatherly in real life, and I bet that he gave him lots of advice.
Yeah.
That's... I don't know. That's just how I imagine him being.
Yeah, I hope he was like, well... If this becomes big, like, you got yourself a nice gig.
Yeah, yeah. From, like, one horror guy to another. God, I really want to meet Robert Englund.
All right, now we're in present day.
Oh, speaking of.
We're in
present... This is the best ever. We go to present day, and it's a dock with a big boat, and they're unloading this crate like no one does. I just never imagine people unloading shit like this, where you have, like, a crate that's clearly super heavy, just hanging... from a crane like 40 feet above the deck.
Yeah.
It's, and then Robert Englund is standing there, and he is clearly a wealthy dude, and he's like, I've been waiting 10 years for this. And I just loved imagining this movie that Robert Englund's not playing a character. Like, this is what he does with his Freddy money, is he just buys pieces. Artifacts. Yeah.
Yeah, it's, they call it an antiquarian sculpture of Ahura Mazda. I'm bad with words.
That sounds right, though.
Thanks. And but oh no, the crane operator is drunk.
Yeah.
And he spills his drink all over the controls, and that boy crashes down onto Robert Englund's assistant, crushing him, who is played, by the way, by
it's a Raimi, right?
It is. It's Ted Raimi. It's Sam Raimi's brother.
Okay.
Which is lots of fun. But I watch the crane operator after this thing crashes and fucking crushes this poor man to
death. He basically spikes the camera and is like, oh no.
He puts his hands on his head and is like, ay, ay, ay. He sounds like the Bumblebee guy from The Simpsons.
he might as well have just looked straight to the camera and been like, what a stinker.
And then like iris in on him.
Oh man,
and
it's
roll
so
credits.
Good. That guy gets smashed.
Yeah.
And then a gem pops out of the statue.
But nobody sees it except for our fucking long-haired, goateed, blue-collar looking guy
Dr.
who pockets
Kirk.
This thing. I forget his name. I wrote it somewhere. It doesn't matter. Etchison. Yeah, this dude's name is Etchison. He steals this gem without anyone looking, even though it's at what is now a crime scene of a horrible fatal accident. He just pockets this gem.
So we cut to this appraisal.
Regal Auctioneers.
Oh, is that what it's called?
With a nasty font for their logo.
Oh, it's nasty. It's very 90s. It looks like a movie theater.
Yeah.
So then this pawn shop owner shows up with the fire opal, says he got it from a guy who knows a guy who knows a guy. Like, he's super vague about it.
Yeah.
And he wants to get it appraised, so he turns it in.
Yeah.
To
the
auctioneer.
The pawn shop's... the pawn shop guy's name is Clegg, or Kleeg, which is, that's a fucking Star Wars name.
Yeah.
But this is before that ever came. This is 5 years before Kleeg Lars was rolling around on his hover chair in Attack of the Clones.
Oh my God.
So that's fun. But the guy at the auctioneer place, this dude named Nick is the character. Oh, man.
Holy fuck.
His hair is gross.
It's parted down the middle, but it's kind of swoops forward a little bit still.
And it looks
it's,
so crunchy.
And he has this shirt on that if you went to any Goodwill now would be there. It's it's like lime green corduroy.
It's a lime green corduroy V-neck collared shirt.
Fuck. It's really good though.
It's like the designers couldn't pick a style.
Oh,
they just closed their eyes, threw a few darts, and we're like, let's make this shirt.
He's a walking green screen.
Yeah. Ugh. Yeah. And the lady up front is Shannon at the front desk, who seems kind of comatose in this scene. So I was very shocked to find out that she was actually like a main character kind of.
Yeah, she's the main character's sister.
Yeah, although she is kind of a cipher. We don't really, she's just there to be a you know, someone in distress for for our protagonist to worry about. But, oh, I just realized it's a fire opal, and fire is kind of the whole baggage that these sisters have, especially Alex.
Because
their parents burned up in a fire.
Wow, Wishmaster.
Yeah, Wishmaster.
Wishmaster's working on a lot of levels.
Deep, man. I don't care what the critics with its 21%
say. You know what? That's the sweet spot, though.
It is. The sweet spot is between 20 and 29%. You find a movie with that rating on Rotten
Guaranteed,
Tomatoes,
it's a good time.
You're
going to
have a fun time, dude.
Honestly, has worked for us every single time.
Yeah.
If we don't know what to watch, we look up a few movies, and if any of them are in that sweet 20% range.
We've strayed before. We've tried something in the 40s.
No,
it's just boring.
Bad.
It's not
boring.
Bad enough to be.
It's not bad enough.
We've tried something in the teens.
Too
it's
bad.
Too bad. You can't watch it.
Yeah.
Yeah. But no, this is in that sweet spot, because in that sweet spot, you get scenes like the tennis match with the 90s music between our protagonist, Alex Amberson. Amber, I noticed, like an opal kind of thing. Yeah, lots of fun stuff here. And she's playing with her friend Josh, who's played by Jack Lemmon's son, I found out.
Oh, okay.
So just so many.
Okay.
So many relatives of famous people.
It's weird because I just I was thinking okay, Jack Lemmon's son, what if you get that guy and then you get Jamie Lee Curtis, who's also a horror icon, but then she's Tony Curtis's daughter, and then you can do a Some Like It Hot kind of reunion.
That's fun.
Special.
Sure, yeah, because Jamie Lee Curtis is definitely the same kind of billing as this guy in Wishmaster.
Yeah.
Whatever lemon.
You know what? I bet they hang out.
Josh is hardcore friend zoned by Alex.
I thought maybe we could go out.
We go out all the time.
Yes, we go out all the time, but we don't go out.
Josh,
there's a difference.
You are my best friend. Do you know how hard a friend is to find? I don't want to mess that up. Dates are a dime a dozen.
Oh my God. This is a thing where we don't see stories like this anymore, because now we're also aware of what the friend zone is and the cliche of the friend zone.
Because he wants to get with her and she's like, but Josh, I just like having you as a friend. And so, but because this is 97, I believe the audience is supposed to be like, but no, you should
give him a chance. He wants to take you to a ball game.
Yeah, no. She wants to go to a ball game. He wants to go to the movies. Although I guess he does want to take her to a ball game.
Ball game for some hot dogs.
Hey, yeah. But she's not interested. He says he puts a spell on her and he puts a sweaty hat on her.
I wrote it down. He goes, he's like, I'm casting a spell on you. And then he takes off his sweaty ass hat that he's been playing tennis in and puts it on her head. No fucking thanks.
She just lets it sit there.
Gross.
She like gets in her car.
And
it's
he's
probably
right up in her face. Like, I put a spell on you. Put this gross ass hat on her. It's so nasty.
She just drives off with his sweat rolling down her face.
Ugh.
Yeah. Then so they go back. They work together.
He's like, I'm going to the lab, just generic lab.
Yeah, we don't see until later that he's actually like an analyzer of the stuff that they get at the auctioneer place and that it works there.
He does the beep boop computer stuff. No idea how accurate
this
gem computer science is.
But apparently being an appraiser at an auctioneer job, it just doesn't pay enough because you got a midnight as a basketball coach too.
Yeah,
because our main character.
I forgot about this weird. Now I think about it, why is this?
Well, because there? Honey, she tells the middle school aged girls that she's coaching in basketball that they need stillness to make their shots, and then in the end, when she's trying to think of a third wish that'll defeat the djinn, she thinks to herself, stillness.
So we had to have a whole basketball.
Yeah, a couple scenes C-plot. There too.
I guess it makes you know, see her as a bit more of a person.
Yeah, she plays tennis. She coaches kids. She's got it all.
Yeah.
Except for
a man.
Except for a man. But Josh is there. Or is he? Because he won't be there for long because he's examining that gem and doing his beep boop in science. And then his fucking microscope and computer blow the fuck up.
Yeah, she has the gem and she's like looking into it and she's like, oh, it's kind of dirty. So she blows on it like,
oh, yeah.
And then she rubs it on her shirt, which any appraiser worth their salt would know. That's how you wake a genie. She wakes the genie.
Yeah, she wakes him up by.
Or the djinn.
Just about.
Mm-hmm.
And then rubbing him on her, which I guess you rub a lamp.
Mm-hmm.
So rubbing it on the shirt.
So that awakens him.
Yeah, and like ties him to her.
Yeah, so they're like linked now.
Yeah.
And so now when this dude, what's his name?
Josh.
When Josh is looking at the.
Because she says there's something inside of it. Can you check it out?
That's right.
Would she see a little tiny djinn in there?
Djinn.
Like, hey, yeah. Let me out.
So she's like, hey, can you look at this? So he puts it in the gem computer,
yeah.
Which is like a conveyor belt that goes into this thing.
And then has lasers shoot it.
And then it's a very 90s computer display that's like analyzing gem. And we were just half expecting it to be like genie detected. But so then his computer blows up.
Yeah, which really hurts him in the process. And then the djinn crawls out looking like a stage one DBZ character, honestly. He looked like...
I wrote down Mars Attacks.
Yeah.
That he looks like Mars Attacks.
I was thinking Dragon Ball Z. Either way, this version of the djinn, played by Vern Troyer, who would be Mini-Me in the Austin Powers movie shortly after this.
Oh, okay.
So that's fun, because he's like a little guy here crawling on the floor.
Oh,
and
yeah.
And he crawls up next to Josh. And is all like, hey, yo, you want this pain to stop? And I feel like I thought they would have to be more explicit. But here the djinn is just like, tell me you want the pain to cease. And Josh is like, okay, yeah. And then that just counts
as a wish,
I guess.
Yeah.
So obviously you want the pain to cease. So he kills him.
He kills him. This is when I realized that this djinn was... gonna be that kind of guy, like a wordplay genie where you have to be very careful about how you word your wishes, which is fun.
It's a lot of fun.
Which, so that's like if you wish for $1 million, you get a million deer on your
that kind of thing. And that's pretty much all of act two is him going around doing kills like that.
It's so
and
fun,
it's a
though.
Ton of fun. It kind of loses that at the party in the end, which we'll get to, Because it kind of just kind of blows out the rules of this whole thing.
It just gets ridiculous. It goes off the rails at the end.
But this premise for a horror movie villain is a lot of fun, and I can see why they made sequels. I'm a little shocked that it didn't become more well known. Although, come to think of it, I can't recall because it's been so long since I've seen the Leprechaun movies. I wonder if it's the same kind of thing with him. If it's like, I'll grant your wishes, but it'll be like a fun little turn of phrase. So maybe that's why. Maybe Wishmaster was just being kept down by Leprechaun, who was like, dude, you're in my lane.
Yeah.
And I've been here
it's
for
very,
for
I mean,
years.
That's like an old, like, monkey's paw.
Yeah.
Isn't it? Where they, in that story, they wish their son, I think their son dies in the war or something, and they wish that he would come back. And so they basically, like, a zombie version of their son shows up.
Yeah.
I think that that's how that story goes. So what, now I, next, I just have this bum rules.
Well, that is the next big moment. But after killing Josh, two important things happen. Alex seems to feel it. And so this poor actress spends a lot of this movie with the camera just crash zooming in on her, dissolving to whoever's dying at the moment, and her like shrieking in pain because I guess she feels all these deaths that the djinn is doing.
Yeah, and half the time she's like with other people.
Yeah, and then the djinn also, after killing Josh, he like levels up and becomes the full djinn. But like, that's it. This is the only kill where that happens. I thought he would like keep leveling up into higher forms, but no, he just needed one kill to get him where he needed to be. There's also the detective Nathanson who comes in and is checking out the place. A lot of fun. He's played by the guy who's in Aliens and plays he's one of the Marines, Frost, ends up getting lit on fire and falls down a well. But so it's cool to see that guy showing up. He's real tall. And she runs in there and, you know, she sees that her friend is dead. And then, we get homeless guy.
Oh, man. I love this scene so much. So there's a homeless man outside of a pharmacy. I wouldn't even hesitate to call this guy a bum. Not that I would ever call a homeless person in real life a bum.
Yeah.
But like movie stock character.
This
dude's a
bum.
Straight up.
Yeah.
So he is outside of the pharmacy. He's asking people for money, and so the pharmacy owner comes out, who's the biggest dick in the world. He comes out and he
and the pharmacy owner is Reggie Bannister from Phantasm.
Movie's
and the homeless guy, I'm not familiar with this dude, George Buckflower, but he's a character actor who I guess is in like almost all of John Carpenter's movies.
Okay.
John Carpenter like always gave him a cameo, and he's usually like a homeless guy or whatnot. I can't specify any movies that he was in because I know he wasn't in The Thing. But
so the pharmacy owner comes out, or the pharmacist comes out, and he basically starts giving this dude a lecture about how he pays taxes.
I'll talk to anybody I want to. You don't own this fucking sidewalk.
You want to know something? I do own this fucking sidewalk. You want to know why? Because I pay fucking taxes.
Fuck you.
No, fuck you.
But I love when he comes outside to shoo away the homeless guy. The homeless guy's like, he left customers in there. That's not a good way
to run
business.
That's not good. Yes. Oh, my God. And then
he says, I hope you die and that your body floats down the gutter so I can piss on it.
Oh, fuck. Yeah. That whole scene is good.
It's great. And then he walks by an alley where the djinn's just hanging out.
Yes.
And it's like, who are you? A friend, perhaps.
And so the djinn talks to the homeless guy and he's like, hey, that pharmacist sucks, huh? And the homeless guy's like, yeah, fuck that dude. I hope he dies of cancer. And he's like, and the djinn's like, oh, do you really want that? Homeless guy's like, fuck yeah. So then the djinn basically gives the pharmacist mega cancer.
Yeah,
I don't know how to describe
cancer?
It.
It's like leprosy. There's like boils coming out of him. He's just foaming at the mouth. Tom Savini's leaning
so
over him,
nasty.
Being like, are you all right,
there's
dude?
There's pus everywhere. It's gross.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's where Tom Savini is.
Yeah, there's a funny little moment where, because the homeless guy's like, well, he should just get cancer and die. And then he watches this guy die, and then he like looks at his cigarette, and he throws the cigarette on the ground. It's like, oh, it's worse than I ever thought it was.
The djinn leans over. He bends over and picks up the the cigarette that the homeless dude dropped on the ground and is basically just talking. I don't remember what the fuck he's saying, but he's like,
you mere
mortals,
them.
Run and tell them I'm the... And the homeless guy's gone at this point, so he's talking to fucking no one, and he gives this whole speech about how he's, like, eternal and is still in this bum outfit.
Run, insect. Run and tell those you will what you will. Tell them there is something loose in their city. Something which feeds on wishes.
And then after he's done giving this speech, he just takes a drag on the cigarette and just exhales like a fucking gangster.
Yeah.
God, it's so good.
I hope to one day make a kill count on this movie. It'll be difficult with that opening fucking scene in the party later on, but assuming I do, that's the thumbnail right there, man.
It's so smoking cigarette funny. Gin.
Then we get some exposition backstory with the sisterly chat. This is where we find out that they're sisters, Alex and Shannon, because they're talking about Josh's death and their parents' death and the fire. And Shannon's like, you're blaming yourself. It's going to happen again. You're going to get hallucinations again.
Yeah.
And I don't know if this really ever comes back a lot. Other than just like people assuming she's kind of crazy, which is just
staple. Kind of hint at Alex having some sort of mental breakdown
after the death of their parents, because she was able to save her sister Shannon from the burning building, but not her parents,
right?
But so that's some fun backstory for our main character. She's just a fully drawn character, huh? She's got backstory and hobbies and a career.
Mm-hmm.
She's doing great. The actress, I don't think, really did anything else, though.
I think I looked her up, and this is what she's known for.
Yeah. Yeah. So, whenever, if you click on an actor or performer's name on Wikipedia and that top paragraph says Wishmaster,
You know what? I wouldn't be mad.
Yeah, right. She has a nightmare of her sister burning, and then she's wakes up on the tennis court, and Wishmaster kind of is next to her, but it's not really Wishmaster. It's just like burnt Josh, maybe.
I think it's Josh.
Burnt Josh, but with Wishmaster's voice.
Yeah.
And then she wakes up in bed. All these jump scares are accented by Manfredini's little stingers, which is a lot of fun. It's just as someone who played that game a lot, Friday the 13th, it just felt like I was playing that game.
Yeah.
It's like, oh shit, Jason's here.
Yeah.
Then she goes to the Department of Science, or no, she goes to a museum to talk to Robert England. Whose character's name is Beaumont, but we're just gonna call him Robert England.
Yeah.
Because come on.
At first I thought it was his house.
Yeah.
It's not. It's a museum.
Yeah, and we find out he is not a very nice guy. He's much more concerned with his statue than his assistant's life.
Mm-hmm.
Just your average evil rich man.
His hair is weird.
Oh, yeah, his hair is also doing weird
it's
stuff.
It's all, like, gelled down. You know how Betty Boop has, like, hair that's, like, in little curls, but they're flat to her face?
Yeah, it's really
That's
gross.
What's going on with his hair. It's unfortunate.
Yeah, 90s were too gelled up. And mm-hmm. I was also guilty of that in the 90s. I would just slather on the gel. People ask me now how I do my hair and what gel I use. Step one is don't use gel,
don't
dude.
Don't use gel.
Yeah, I use a paste, a little grip cream kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But gel is just, oh, man, I'm just imagining like that LA Looks or whatever gel. It's coming out of the bottle. It's all blue. And there's like bubbles and shit.
That stuff smells good, though.
It does smell good. Hell on your hair, though.
Yep.
At the Department of Science, though, there's like this shot of a guy with a jar of eyeballs.
Oh my god! Yes. Okay. So it's where is this at? I think it's the morgue or something.
Oh, it is the morgue because it's the guy. Oh, hey, look, this is some fucking foreshadowing because the guy who gets scared by the guy with the eyeballs gets his eyes taken out.
Oh, he does.
Wow, Wishmaster, you deep as fuck.
So basically, we cut to the morgue where there's two like '90s stock kind of young dudes working in a morgue.
Yeah, this guy looks like he could be
Sideshow Bob.
He does. I was going to say he looks like he could tour with They Might Be Giants and play like drums for them or something.
Mm-hmm. So we see this morgue technician, and then there's a guy who pops out and is like, blah, with a jar of eyeballs. And it's like, gotcha, man, and leaves. And we never see
He just leaves the morgue with this jar of eyeballs. Like, that's another movie right there.
Oh, man. I bet he does that all the time.
Like, what's he fucking doing with those eyeballs, man?
Yeah.
Then this morgue assistant dude walks in and finds the Wishmaster like, oh, but walking up to the morgue is when we see the Wishmaster approaching this very public building, you point out it's nice that they acknowledge that this guy looks fucking weird.
All of the extras are looking at him like, who the fuck is this dude?
Yeah.
Because I hate when movies do that. They kind of forget to like have extras react to stuff. Like if someone looks weird or something weird's going on. But I like that this movie is like, no, everyone knows that this guy's weird looking and he does not blend in, even though he's got a homeless dude costume on.
So Sideshow Bob finds him. And this is when Wishmaster's getting his Patrick Warburton face and he's stealing it from this dead guy in the morgue. And the morgue dude finds him and is like, oh, my God. And Wishmaster's like, do you want to not see this shit anymore?
Yeah.
And guy's like, yeah.
Sure, man, I don't care.
And then his eyes disappear, mm-hmm. which is revealed in a fun little camera movement that swings around from the back of his head to the front. And I think this was like a shot that I saw on a DVD I had of like crazy killers. And this is how I found out about Wishmaster, was this scene was on there. Because then it's that crazy slanty distorted shot of his Patrick Warburton face, and he's like smiling, but like the camera's super skewed, and it doesn't really.
So he gets like he gets a person face from the dead body he was fucking with.
Yeah, yeah. So now he's got this person face.
Yeah.
That apparently is sexy as hell.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah. Oh, really quick. I just noticed in my notes, in Robert Englund's gallery, we get a little Pazuzu cameo, which I appreciated.
Oh, yeah.
He's got like this hall of like statues of gods and Pazuzus hanging
out. Which must cost like billions of dollars.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And Pazuzu's in there just for another horror thing, dude. Yeah. I love it. They care so much.
Yeah.
Alex goes and meets
you were gonna talk about the genie looking sexy. He goes to like the clothing store to get a suit.
Yeah,
which is a very good scene.
Yeah, yeah. He goes shopping. We get our shopping montage. I'm surprised we didn't get a bunch of shots of him like coming out in different outfits and like people being like thumbs up, thumbs down. But I guess this guy doesn't get any thumbs down because the chick
wants him.
Yeah. What's her name? Anella? Something like that?
Yeah.
She is into him. And he does a little nice party trick when he asks her cash.
Oh,
she
my
wants cash
God.
Or credit,
she's ringing him up and she's like, cash or credit? And he's like, cash.
No,
and
no. He's like, what do you want?
Oh.
She's like, I guess cash. And then cash in her boobs.
That's right. Cash shows up in her cleavage.
Yeah.
And then he gets real weird, and this is when I'm like, please leave my store, sir, is when he's like, you know, you're very beautiful, but doesn't it totally bug you that you're gonna die one day and be old? And she's like, I guess, I don't know.
I really appreciate her reaction. It's very stoic and measured. She's like, I guess that's life.
Yeah,
you know, happens.
And he's
to
like
everyone.
But wouldn't you totally want it to not be that way though? And she's like, I guess. And so he's like, very well. And then so she can remain beautiful forever, he turns her into a mannequin.
Yeah, a very strange looking
it's
mannequin.
It's really creepy looking.
I don't know why they didn't just get like a regular mannequin.
It's really weird.
Yeah. Which if I do a kill count on, I was all prepared to chalk that up right then. But later you see that when he's collecting his souls, she's kind of still alive in that mannequin, dude.
Yeah.
Because you see her eyes like roll up into her head. So I guess she's just chilling as a mannequin, which that sucks.
Yep.
Alex goes to meet Professor Derleth.
Oh, is this Emma Thompson lookalike?
Yeah. The folklore professor. And she's the one who's like, forget Barbara Eden, forget Robin Williams. Too soon, lady. And she's fun. She's a lot of fun. She's like directing this play going on. And, like, not giving Alex any attention, but Alex is forceful. And then she's like, oh, I like you. There's an acting student does a jump scare with a mask.
Oh gosh, yeah.
Just for the jump scare. But she just gives a lot of exposition about how the djinn, they're evil. They're just totes evil. They're not like our popular culture djinn, and that like their power is with wishes.
Yeah. And they basically exist to make humans miserable. Like, that's their goal.
Yeah. That's a fun little scene. Mostly because it's fun acting stuff.
You know what's a fun scene, though, is the one that I think is next. I have it written down as next. Oh, no, but that is a crazy scene.
Police station scene's insane because the djinn walks into the police station to talk to Nathanson, that the cop played by Frost, and he's trying to get Alex's phone number to reach her. I find that hilarious that he's limited.
He's eternally powerful, but he can't use a phone book.
Yeah, he has to fucking create a diversion so he can steal her business card from a file. But he's talking to this cop, and the cop just starts like bearing his soul to this complete fucking stranger.
Yeah,
because the wishmaster's like, "Hey man, why are you feeling so bad?" And the cop's like, "You see that guy over there? Man, I just want to bust him. He's always getting off. Mm-hmm. He's never, nothing ever sticks to him. He's like Teflon. I just wish we could bust him for first degree murder." And so the Wishmaster makes it so this guy just fucking grabs a gun, shoots two cops dead, rips the jaw off another guy.
Yeah.
It's so awesome.
It was so gross.
And during the kerfuffle is when the djinn steals Alex's business card and gets her number.
Yeah.
Gets them digits.
Yep.
Fun scene right there. What were you thinking is next?
When he goes to the auction house and Kane Hodder's there.
Yeah, that's after Alex does some research with some wine and cigarettes.
Oh my god, wine and cigarettes.
Yeah, she is having a night.
Oh man, she gets out all her textbooks and it's, yeah, just a montage of her like up all night smoking and getting wine drunk.
Yeah.
Learning about gin.
You go, Alex.
Yeah.
You have that night to yourself.
It's weird how if this movie were made today, it'd be red wine. Yeah. I feel like red wine is in vogue right now.
Yeah, I wasn't aware that white wine was maybe more popular back then. But yeah, red wine's definitely the preferred wine now. And she wouldn't be smoking.
She would not be smoking.
Last time we had like a protagonist smoke was Avatar, and people made fucking a huge deal of
that's
it.
That's right.
Sigourney Weaver smoked, and everyone was like, why is she smoking?
That's right.
Sometimes characters smoke.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah, but I guess definitely more frequently in the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
But yes. You're right. Then we get our Kane Hodder cameo.
Oh, man. This is another very good scene that kind of sealed for me how much I love this movie in general. So he goes to the auction house. It's after hours. And he basically, there's a glass door. And so he is talking, the djinn is talking through the glass door at the security guard played by Kane Hodder. And he's like, hey, I need to talk to your boss. And Kane Hodder's like, it's appointment only. I'm sorry. And he's like, I have to get inside. He's being super creepy about it.
Yeah.
He looks like a normal dude right now, like a dude wearing a suit. And he's like basically just badgering Kane Hodder. And then
he calls him little man. Which
yeah, little man. I've dealt with your type before, little man, or something. And then how does this go? Somehow Kane Hodder
says, I wish you would
leave. I wish you would get the fuck out of here or something. And so then what happens, and this is the funniest shit, is the djinn like involuntarily it starts turning around because this guy wished he would leave and he's just going, no, no.
No. I have to get inside.
Well, now you'd have to go through me. And that is something I would love to see.
Perfectly played by Andrew Dimmock.
And then Kane Hodder says, to get in, you'd have to go right through me. And oh man, I would love to see that.
Yeah.
So then wish
Kane,
granted.
You were almost in the clear, dude.
Wish granted, I don't understand how.
Because he turns him into like glass. And I thought he would break him.
Yeah.
But no, he walks through this glass guard.
It's so weird.
Comes out the other side in a very strange, you know, 90s CG effect, leaves, and then Kane Hodder shatters with some more 90s CG of glass shards.
I don't really get what was happening in this part. It's weird. It's hard to even explain. You would just have to kind of watch it.
Yeah. But we get Kane Hodder, stained glass Kane Hodder.
Yeah.
Stained glass? No, I got nothing. He goes and talks to crunchy hair Nick, who's, you know, the guy at the auctioneer place.
Oh my god. Yes. And for his credit, he's a good boss, cuz he's like, "All right. You're creepy, and I know you're trying to get my employee's number because you're a creep, and I'm not going to give it to you." He already like knows this dude's shady.
Yeah.
And so what happens is there's this like artifact just chilling on his desk, and the djinn is like, "Nice. This is a nice thingy. Don't you wish it was 10 times more valuable?" And the guy's like, sure, I would love that. And so the djinn turns it gold. Like he turns it from like kind of a tarnished looking silver to like gold. The guy's like, "Holy fuck." And then
the guy's like, "Well, that's pretty great, but I'm still not going to give you her number." And the djinn's like, "What would it take?"
That's right.
And the guy's like, I don't know,
$1 million. And then the guy's like, the djinn's like, "Do you want $1 million? And the guy's like, "Sure." Cut to, oh my god, this. I almost had to pause the movie because I was laughing so hard. Cut to the inside of an airport, where this this old lady who looks like Mrs. Doubtfire is like, I think she's buying a plane ticket, and then she, I don't know why you would be signing forms like this at an airport.
Because we needed it for the
movie.
For
plot.
Yeah.
So she signs a form listing the auction house owner, who we realize is her son, as her beneficiary. Like basically leaving all of her money to him. And she's like, "Oh, my son runs this auction house and blah, blah, blah. And he's very wealthy." And so,
but apparently she's worth $1 million.
Apparently she's worth a ton of money. So she leaves him all her money, then cut to plane taking off, plane explodes in
like,
the sky.
Immediately.
It's so funny.
Holy
that
shit.
That plane is off the ground for 3 seconds and then it blows up.
"Oh, wait a minute. You've forgotten to fill in the beneficiary."
"How silly. It's my son, Nick. He owns a very prestigious auction house."
"There you go. Thanks for your business, Mrs. Merritt. Enjoy your flight."
He killed so many people with that, man. Oh, my God.
But
it was so sudden. It was like...
I thought maybe she would have a heart attack or something.
No, he kills a whole fucking plane,
he kills
a plane
of people.
Oh, it's great.
Oh, fuck, it's so funny.
It's so funny. Then he collects all his souls. I claim that, which is owed... And we see all the people like, oh, and their souls leaving. So that's the Officer Nathanson, the bum, the eye guy, the mannequin, all their souls are just, oh, and Nick, crunchy hair Nick. Wishmaster collects all those souls, and it's like, okay, that's an act break. We're moving into like final stuff, I think.
Yes. So Alex goes to visit that professor we were talking about earlier, the Emma Thompson looking lady, who we quickly realize is actually just the djinn.
Yeah.
Disguises her, because Alex shows up and this lady's like, "Do you want something to drink? Do you want me to turn on the heat? Are you cold? Do you want me to do that?" And he's trying to just bait her into saying yes to something.
Yeah, he's trying to burn through the 3 wishes that she needs to,
yes,
to get.
Yes.
And she's like, "Lady, I don't want your maker's mark. I don't want the heat.
This cabinet's totally nice. Your boss would love this." As she's opening maker's mark and is like, "This is very fancy."
Yeah. Yeah.
"Very fancy alcohol. I'm
like
a djinn. I don't know."
"They melt actual wax on the cover. Yeah. It must be nice." Yeah, and then he also uses expressions such as "shit just hit the fan."
Yes, I wrote, quote, "shit just hit the fan, didn't it?" Unquote.
So he does reveal himself as the djinn to Alex and gives her a freebie wish, I think, and she wishes for him to blow his brains out.
Yeah.
So he does with some fun little effects. And he's like, "See, that which is eternal cannot die. But if it's any consolation, that hurt like a bitch."
Yeah, I liked that. And then she wishes to see
what he is.
She wants to know what he is. So
he's got his little tendrils are like moving. They're like wriggling around on his shoulders.
So basically, once she wishes that, she gets like sucked into inside the gem, mm-hmm. which is apparently where his little throne room is inside this little opal.
I was just thinking of, while watching it, Killer Clowns, because it looks kind of like the inside the spaceship. But I would venture to say that it looked better in Killer Clowns, because this is just like this red, these red tunnels with some smoke machines going on.
Yeah.
And it just looks so shitty as they're running around it.
And there's kind of like a... He's got like a little sex dungeon thing going on.
Oh yeah, people are getting whipped and shit.
Yes, he's got like, he's on his throne and she sees the souls of all the people that made wishes. So yeah. We have like the clerk from the store and we have, what's his face, Joey, or is it Joey?
Nick?
I don't know.
Crunchy hair?
That's the auction guy.
Yeah.
Who's her?
Josh?
Josh.
Oh.
Right? It's all those people and they're all getting like whipped and stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then he's got a dog.
He's got a dog. He's got a genie dog.
A real shit looking dog, dude.
Yeah.
This dog does not look good. And why does he have a dog?
I don't know. We don't see it any other.
It chases her like it's the alien in Alien 3.
Yeah, like that's running... what I thought of.
Yeah, he's like chasing her down these halls. He's like going on the ceiling. It's a first person point of view. It's literally Alien 3.
I thought of that too, where it looks all weird and like copy pasted.
Yeah.
On.
Yeah, it's not great. This is a weird fucking scene, dude.
She wishes to be brought back to her apartment without him in it.
Without him in
and
it.
And then she is zapped back, and then she just, the phone rings, and she knows it's him, so she picks up and just goes, fuck you, and it hangs
no,
up.
No, when the phone rings, it's a crash zoom on the answering machine. It's like this hardcore crash zoom. Yeah, and it's like Bell South. And but then
we exist.
Yeah. But then... It's not that she like answers it. He leaves her a message. Also,
oh my god, that's right. Also, it's like leave a message at the beep. Hi, it's me, the Jin.
Two wishes in. We're so connected now. Wherever you go, there I'll be. Wherever you are, I will find you.
Fuck you.
And earlier in the movie, he's like, in her head, she's hearing his voice in her head, but at this point he's just giving her a call.
Yeah.
Like, hi, it's me, by
it's
the way
me.
Really need you to make that third wish.
Yeah.
And then she does answer and is like,
fuck you.
Yeah.
Oh man.
Oh, and then so she's like, oh, I gotta get to this party.
Oh, Robert England's throwing a party because she knows her sister is there.
Yeah. But on the way there, there's just a random scene of her driving to the party, driving like crazy.
Yeah.
All over the road, stopping in the road, and then the Jin's at her window and he's like, going my way, and she like drives off and that's it. Like, why?
It's so nuts.
What
we did not need. It's great.
How did that not get cut?
I don't know.
Just have her get to the party.
Yeah, so she shows up at the party, and this is when I
he gets to the party first.
Oh,
because we get our Tony Todd cameo.
Oh yeah
as Johnny Valentine, bouncer extraordinaire.
This is when I yelled, fucking finally.
Yeah.
We get Tony Todd, the sexiest.
I guess she does
villain.
Get there.
She gets there first.
You're right. I'm sorry.
Because she gets let in. And then he's like.
Because she tells Tony Todd, this guy's chasing me.
Yeah.
And so Tony Todd doesn't check her credentials at all.
No.
He just lets her in. So, like, there's a tip for
Tony
you.
Tony Todd is great.
Well, I'm just saying, tip for you. If you ever want to get into a fancy party, I can, like, go with you. And then you can run up to the bouncer and be like, this guy's chasing me.
This guy's crazy.
You'll get in. I guess I'll
you
have
might
a,
get arrested.
I'll have a growling match with Tony Todd because that's what happens.
Oh God, it's so funny. They both are just snarling at each other. It's Tony Todd and the Jin, and they're both like talking in these super low voices.
I've dealt with your type before. Mister, you never even met my type before.
And eventually,
Tony, I wish he was in it more because I love him.
He was in it more than Kane Hodder.
That's
he had more lines than Kane Hodder.
That's fair.
Kane Hodder was very come and go.
Yeah.
He just died. Tony Todd eventually relents and admits that he would like to escape.
Yeah, the Jin basically baits him into admitting that he doesn't love doing this job, being a bouncer day in and day out. He's like, I would like to escape.
And so Jin walks away. Rack 2 in the background.
Tony Todd's
in a water,
like a Houdini. It's like a water tank.
Yeah.
And he's wearing a straight jacket. And the Jin goes, Houdini did it in 2.5 minutes. And exits frame right into the party.
Yeah. As Tony Todd presumably drowns to death.
Mm-hmm.
Great. A lot of This movie has so many fun deaths.
It does.
It has a lot of fun kills in
it. Yeah.
Because we're about to get fucking insane here.
This is when shit goes crazy.
This is when it gets blown out entirely. Because
yeah.
She gets the party. Her sister's there. Her sister's like, check out that hot guy from the basketball court. Because there was a scene where while Alex was coaching her little kids, her sister was in the stands and like noticed the gin and got all hot for him.
Yeah.
Because no one can resist Andrew Dimoff.
Yeah.
It's, you know what? It's the confidence. He walks around with that confidence, and that's what will do it, guys. Mm-hmm. But she's like, hey, that hot guy's here, and he's talking to Robert Englund over there.
Yeah.
And that's when he gets Robert Englund to wish that...
So what happens is the djinn alludes to the scene we saw at the beginning. Mm-hmm. Is he's like, I once knew of a guy who he threw a party that people talked about for hundreds of years.
And yeah.
The Robert Englund's like, oh man, I wish I could throw a party like that. And so the djinn grants his wish, and I don't even know
shit hits the
what
fan.
Happens.
I mean, the first big thing is a lady turns the glass and blows up.
Yeah.
And just slices people's faces off and impales people. We get crazy tentacles coming out of a statue. That one guy gets decapitated with piano wire, and I believe that guy is the director in a cameo.
Got it. Okay.
I think I read that.
Yeah.
But it's a nice decapitation. These piano wires just coming out and
this scene's crazy. Like,
there's a guy on fire doing a fire stunt in an obvious burn suit.
Yes, that made me laugh very hard. It's like cut stunts. To guy in burn suit.
In like the classic, like the footage is slowed down so you get more time out of it because he couldn't actually be on fire for that long. Although this guy seemed like he was on fire for a while.
Yeah.
So props to him. Listen to the music of their agony.
Oh, so fun. And his eyes like roll back in his head. He's rock hard. You know it.
Yeah. So this is the point of where I'm like, nobody wished for a fucking piano to kill people or for these statues to come to
life.
He's
just having fun.
This is the writer being like, you know what? I've made it this far.
I liked the statues a lot.
And this is after she already saw one statue come to life and throw a trident at her.
Yeah.
So she knows that statues.
So she knows that this is a thing.
Yeah. Oh, this is also after Robert Englund spits up a black lung.
Fuck.
Like, what is that?
I wrote down one of my notes is just, I hate seeing Robert Englund like this. I hate so much seeing him like totally wuss out at the sight of the djinn, because in my head he's just Freddy, and it's so weird having him be like, oh my god.
So she runs away to this hallway where there's these statues.
Yeah.
Oh, and you know what I read? I didn't notice it when we watched it, but I read that apparently you can see Pazuzu fucking up people in the background.
I noticed that.
Oh, you did see
him killing
people?
Yeah, I noticed Pazuzu, yeah. Nice. The statues reminded me of that. Fuck, and I forget what it's called. I'm just having a brain fart. Those like statues in China where like they discovered them.
Oh, the Terracotta Army?
Yeah, the Terracotta Army. Yeah, that's what it reminded me of.
Yeah.
Thank you. That's what it was called.
Yeah, there's like four statues, and she like walks down the hall in between them just very slowly, because I guess that'll help not bring them to life. Some cops run in, and they're like, ma'am, we're evacuating the area. And then statues versus cops. Oh, don't forget about Dr. Caligari hopping
out
of that
painting. Is it
Dr.
Caligari? I think.
It might be Dr. Jekyll.
I don't know, though. I think it might be Dr. Caligari.
He's got a top hat.
There's like a painting where this dude pops out, and we think it's Dr. Caligari, but we're not sure.
Yeah. Someone can correct us on that in a polite way. That'd be nice.
I was trying to Google what it was, but anytime you Google Wishmaster painting, you just get the painting of her sister that we see in the next scene.
Oh, yeah, where her sister's on fire.
Yeah. So Alex runs into this room that only has the one exit, and so the djinn's blocking it. With all the statues, he has like a whole posse now.
Yeah.
And at this point, he says, fuck it.
Fuck it.
And he also says, baby. I don't know what context.
He says,
all right then. Fuck it. You know what I say. If you can't beat them, burn them, baby.
There's a painting of Alex's sister in a burning building, and you can hear her sister screaming. And so Alex is like, oh fuck, I gotta make my final wish. And to me, this solution is so simple.
Yeah. But no, she had to get all still for it.
And she wishes She says, I wish Mickey Torelli wasn't drinking on the job 2 days ago, I think is what she says. And Mickey Torelli was the crane operator from the beginning. So when she wishes that, that means he would never have dropped the crate, which means the gin would have never been unleashed. So basically the whole plot didn't happen.
Yeah. And it works.
Except she remembers everything.
Oh, does she?
She must, because I don't think she would be all over her coworker.
Oh, that's right. Because the moral of the story is, hey, that guy who wants to date you, but you just think of him as a friend, he could die any
day. He could die any second, so you should date him.
You might as well date him.
So nothing happened. It goes back to like the thing being delivered, and Robert Englund's like, I've been waiting for this for years. So he gets his shipment. Everything's good. And then we see that Alex wants to go on a date with Joey, and she like wants his dick so bad, and he's like, are you okay?
Yeah, even he's a little
and it just is weird that her motivation to date him is, I felt really sad when he died, so you know, we might as well.
Yeah, that's sending all sorts of wrong messages. I know. Man,
if your only reason to date someone is like, I guess I'd be sad if they died, I don't know, it's
this, but yeah, that solution there, it seems so simple, because
I kind of like it, though. That's a very fairy tale solution.
It is. But couldn't she have also been like, I wish Robert Englund had never ordered you? I don't know. I guess this way she knows it's safely in Robert Englund's collection.
Yeah. And then this way, you know, that event is something we can see happen again.
Yeah.
Whereas like, what, flashback to Robert Englund being like, you know what? I can't afford this, and like not ordering it.
Yeah, it's just like, him going over his finances, like, ooh, didn't really make enough last quarter. I think I'll have to put this one out of hold.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then we were also talking about like, I wish that you had never existed, but then he could just
uncreate the universe.
Yeah.
So that's no good.
Maybe don't fuck with that. I guess it's a good solution.
Yeah, or like I guess I wish you specifically didn't exist.
Dude, so I'm sure he'd find a way.
He'd find a way, yeah.
She did it, though.
She did, yeah.
And doesn't he say, like, not by you?
Not by you. He basically is like, no. And then he gets sucked into the gem, and there's like a fucking, it's like the mask. He's getting sucked in, and then his eyes kind of like pop out. It's very silly. So anyway, yeah, so life is normal. Robert Englund gets his statue, and then it's the very last shot of the movie is you see his gallery of statues where, like, Pazuzu was and stuff, and it zooms in to where the statue, there was, like, a space for, what was it, Ahura Mazda?
Yes.
And then it keeps going, and it zooms, like, into the statue, and that's where the gem was.
Yeah.
And you see the djinn sitting there in the gem, and he's waiting to be unleashed.
Yeah.
So, sequels.
Yeah. So that's Wishmaster. How do you feel about Wishmaster? I feel like
I fucking
obvious.
Love Wishmaster.
Yeah.
Wishmaster is like, it has a place in my heart now because it's so stupid and so fun and has Tony Todd in it.
Yeah.
And I love Tony Todd.
This movie has a lot going for it.
It really does.
So many kills that are like so fun. All of them are fun. And, you know, it's never just people getting stabbed and shit. It's all these fun, wacky, like, wordplay kills.
Yeah. I feel like everyone in it is having fun.
Yeah.
I feel like the guy playing the djinn is in on the joke.
Mm-hmm. It's got great practical effects.
Yeah, there's a lot of really cool effects in this. There's a lot of really bad effects in this. But I feel like for every bad effect, there's a really good one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
because, like, it does use some 90s CG, but, like, whatever.
It could have.
It looks bad, but it's not all.
This movie, I think we talked about this, is just for the year it's made, this is when everyone was like, we gotta have CG in everything.
Yeah, this was like starting to ramp up to that.
Late 90s, everything from then looks like shit. And I just think it's cool that this movie could have looked so much shittier,
mm-hmm.
but there's still a lot of practical stuff.
Yeah, and I mean, that's definitely because of the director, Kurtzman, being a makeup artist guy who like does that kind of stuff. So that's why we get cool shit, man.
I mean, I'd imagine just this movie, you have so many horror people involved. I can't see a scenario where this whole movie is a CGI like sludge fest.
I think any horror fan who has seen a lot of horror movies, knows a lot of horror people, fucking watch this, man.
Yeah.
It's a lot of fun. I know I've seen Wishmaster 2 and 3 before. They were out back when like I was super into horror movies as a kid. Fourth one I never saw, but like I said, Andrew Dimoff is only Wishmaster in the second one, and I have no idea the quality of those movies. Mm-hmm. I'm sure we'll watch them eventually. I'm sure I'll do a kill count on this eventually. It'll be a hell of a kill count. A fucking plane blows up, and then all the deaths get reversed at the end, but I'm still going to count them. It'll be a mess. There'll be a lot of
comments.
It will
be like a soul capture count, kind
of. Oh, see? Yeah, I don't know.
It's complicated.
It'll be very complicated, but I can't let this movie...
I loved it.
I need more people to be aware of this.
It's,
so
oh my God.
It has to be covered.
Yeah, highly recommend. It's not scary. Any jump scares in it, there's not really... I mean, there are, but they're not...
They're not effective.
They didn't really get me.
Yeah.
I just kind of laughed at them.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I hate jump scares. I absolutely despise them. So I will always say if there's any bad ones in a movie, and there weren't in this.
So thank you for listening to our movie review of Wishmaster. Loved it. Make sure to hit us up on email at deadmeatpod@gmail.com if you have any suggestions or questions or complaints or, you know, if you have a life goal and you're not sure how to obtain it, just go ahead and email us and we'll let you know what to do. We're guidance counselors.
Yeah.
We're also on social media at Dead Meat James on Twitter and Instagram. And Chelsea, where can people find you?
I'm at Carebeck on Twitter and Instagram. That's CareBecc.
That's right. And my personal Twitter and Instagram are at James A. Janice. That personal Twitter gets pretty political, so if you want to avoid that, just stick to Dead Meat James.
And thank you guys so much for listening.
Yeah, thanks for listening. It's been a great time with the launch of this podcast. We never expected it to do as well as it has, so thank you so much for listening and subscribing, and make sure you keep that up. Leave reviews on iTunes, give us 5-star ratings, all that good stuff.
Yeah, thank you guys.
Thanks.